Heile schön. Vaneshu Pavaneshu Cham Yatra Kva Kasam Rishayas Tatra Sanito Hara Sarit Sarashu Saileshu Vanesu Pavaneshu Cha Yatra Kva Kasan Rishayas Tatra Sanito Hara. Sarit Sarashu Saileshu Vaneshu Pavaneshu Cha Yatra Kva Kashin Rishayas Tatra Sanito Hara Sarit Sarashu Saileshu Vaneshu Pavaneshu Cha Yatra Kva Kashan Rishayas Tatra Sanito Hara Sarit Sarashu Saileshu Vaneshu Pavaneshu Cha Yatra Kva Kasan Rishayas Tatra Sanito Hara So the word for word translation, Sarit, near the shores of the rivers, Sarashu, and near the lakes, Shaileshu, near the mountains, Vaneshu, in the forests, Upavaneshu, in the gardens or small forests, Cha, also, Yatra, wherever, Kva, anywhere, Cha, also, Asan, were existing, Rishaya, great sages, Tatra, there, Sanihuta was present. Hara, Lord Shiva. Translation. Following Mohini, Lord Shiva went everywhere, near the shores of the rivers and lakes, near the mountains, near the forests, near the gardens, and wherever there lived great sages. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Mohini Murti dragged Lord Shiva to so many places, especially to where the great sages lived, to instruct the sages that their Lord Shiva had become mad for a beautiful woman. Thus, although they were all great sages and saintly persons, they should not think themselves free, but should remain extremely cautious about beautiful women. No one should think himself liberated in the presence of a beautiful woman. The Shastras enjoin, Matra Svarsra Duhitra Va Navivikashano Bhavet Balavan Indriya Gramo Vidvamsam Apikashati. One should not stay in a solitary place with a woman, even if she be his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so uncontrollably powerful. that in the presence of a woman, one may become agitated, even if he's very learned and advanced. And that's Bhagavatam 9.19.17. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. In looking at this particular verse that we read today, I guess I'll read the translation once again. Following Mohini, Lord Shiva went everywhere, near the shores of the rivers and lakes, near the mountains, near the forests, near the gardens, and wherever there lived great sages. So in looking at this verse, I found myself focusing on the verse that Srila Prabhupada has extracted in connection to this verse. And the verse that he's quoting here is coming from a pastime of King Yayati. And this particular king, he came to an understanding, or he reached an understanding, that if one is lusty and greedy, then even the total stock of gold in the whole world cannot satisfy that vigorous desire. So the vigor of these desires is so great that the desires are like a fire. And if one were to extinguish such a fire, one wouldn't use a substance that allows for the fire to become even more of a roaring fire. So, for instance, when there's a fire sacrifice, one may use ghee, and that increases the fire. So one wouldn't be using ghee in order to extinguish the fire. So it means that a different process is needed if one's attempting to extinguish a fire, and rather than using the very thing that ignites it. So so as opposed to feeding the desires, which are being compared to the fire, you're not going to be providing the desires the very thing that's going to exacerbate those desires. So the alternate process would be to completely step back and renounce a life of enjoyment or trying to fulfill those desires. And this can be done through utilizing some intelligence. And King Yayati, he actually puts it this way. So this is how he states it. As supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. So we can look at this a little bit. Now, the particular vigorous desires, so lust is, you know, there's some vigor internally. that vigorous desire to enjoy the senses, like there's always an urge to see or an urge to touch, This is there even when this vehicle that has these sensors that want to reach out, when that vehicle is even in a decrepit condition, still those desires are there. So the desires are what drives a person to go here and there, trying to find some sort of satisfaction for those desires. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example of membership clubs that allow old men. So these are the persons with the decrepit bodies. So in these membership clubs, these old men, the decrepit bodies, but the senses are there, even in a decrepit condition, but with the raging fire of desire within, in those particular clubs, they'll have the opportunity to have some association of female persons and also to, I guess, imbibe alcohol, which is seen as, some sort of satisfaction for the senses. So this is the example Srila Prabhupada gives. So taking into account the logic so far, one can say not only in order to not stoke the fire of those desires internally, those vigorous desires, to keep them vigorous, you don't want to keep them healthy, and to avoid the embarrassment of attempting to do so in a decrepit body, even more so, the recommendation is voluntarily giving up those desires. So, it's the same logical thing to do. So it seems that some awareness of the desires being present needs to be there, and then considering carefully how to deal with them. So King Yayati gives this realization. For those who are too attached to material enjoyment, sense gratification is very difficult to give up. Even when one is invalid because of old age, one cannot give up such desires for sense gratification. Therefore, one who actually desires happiness must give up such unsatisfied desires, which are the cause of all tribulation. So this difficulty to give up finding some satisfaction for the senses, and especially, and that's this verse and also the verse that Srila Prabhupada has taken from Srimad Bhagavatam in the ninth canto, particularly that of satisfying sexual desire. It's this difficulty is depicted so amazingly in this one pastime or the situation that King Pururava found himself in. So I'm going to go into this because I think it's completely fascinating. Because it gives a very graphic picture of the desires being stoked and what the outcome is. So King Pururava, he was the king ruling the earth at a particular time, and he was extremely beautiful physically. And he first saw this apsara, her name was Urvasi, and it's described that his first response was that he became extremely jubilant. And and that jubilation was a kind of ecstasy, a joy. And it says that the hairs on his body even stood up on end when he saw Urvasi. So these are the words that he spoke to, and it's very interesting. Often, like when I've done classes with 11 to 14-year-olds, and I quote these kind of statements, I always have the boys saying, huh? Who would speak like that? So this but here's an example that I'm sure I can almost hear the boys of that age group with their eyebrows raised. But this is, these were the words. So this is the king speaking to Urvasi. So he says, and these are almost the first words he says, "O most beautiful woman, you are welcome. Please sit here and tell me what I can do for you. You may enjoy with me as long as you desire. Let us pass our life happily in a sexual relationship." So this is the first thing he says to her. Yes, I can just see the teenagers having a lot of difficulty with this. Now, clearly the king was overwhelmed with material desires, so he spoke very directly and in a polite manner, you could say, because, yeah, but very explicitly. But as there were, he was being overwhelmed by material desires. So for many years, King Pururava, this is actually quoting from Uddhava Gita, he enjoyed sex with Urvasi, she was a celestial woman, and he still wasn't satisfied, this is quoting from Uddhava Gita, by such insignificant enjoyment. Indeed, he was so captivated by Urvasi that he did not notice how the days and nights were passing. So that's from the 20th chapter of Uddhava Gita. Now, Krishna gives a quick summary of how this whole saga played itself out. And Krishna says that this is how the course of the relationship goes. The glorious King Pururava became bewildered due to separation from the Apsara Urvasi. Later on, however, he regained her association at Kurukshetra. Thereafter, he performed a sacrifice with the help of the Gandharvas and thus pleased the demigods. Finally, when he attained the planet of Urvasi, so that the cause of his lamentation was vanquished, he sang the following song. So this is Uddhava Gita. So Krishna gives a quick summary of the way the relationship plays itself out. But I'm going to go into a little bit because it's so connected to this raging internal fire. So now King Pururava, he actually became overwhelmed with grief because of separation from Urvasi. There was a moment where she left him. So there's a description of Urvasi leaving King Pururava because she was returning to her own abode. And the reason she left is an interesting one. He had actually broken a particular stricture she'd placed for her being willing to remain with him. And that was she never wanted to see him naked except... I guess, during the sexual encounters. So, as it happened, she had two lambs that she had brought with her, and somehow these lambs were stolen, and she actually used very sharp words. It was the middle of the night, telling him that, you know, how could he be lying there not rescuing the lambs? So the king didn't even dress himself properly. He rushed out, you know, immediately, heroically. He's going to go and rescue the lambs wherever they had got taken. So it was after this that there's this description where Urvasi is leaving him because he returns and she sees him naked. And so he broke the particular stricture she'd placed upon him, because this is one of the codes of behavior of celestial beings. All the food stuff that they take in has to be made with ghee. That's the one stricture. And the second one is they don't want to see any naked body at all, unless it's at the, I guess, the those intimate moments. So here's the description of Urvasi leaving the king for her own abode. Even though he was naked, which was a violation of one of her conditions for accepting him, an earthly being, as her husband, he ran after her like a madman with great affliction, crying out, "Oh, dear one, please wait." His outward expression of grief was so great that he said, "Oh, dear one, why are you going? You're killing me. Please wait." So this is, you know, how his raging fire is so intense that, you know, he sees himself as dying now. So it means that because of his great attraction for her, he was extremely disturbed. And in fact, he began traveling all over the earth like a madman because he's searching for her. And it's very similar, I thought, to this particular verse we're looking at today, because we find Lord Shiva following Mohini Murti everywhere. It says, near the shores of the rivers and lakes, near the mountains, near the forests, near the gardens, and wherever they lived great sages. So a very similar sort of external behavior is visible when there's that internal raging fire. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives the reason for the movements of Mohini Murti. She was dragging Lord Shiva to many places that were the residences of the sages. And it was because he wanted the sages to receive instruction. So that instruction was, see, Lord Shiva has become mad for a beautiful woman. But in particular, the instruction was that they shouldn't think themselves liberated from material desires in the presence of a beautiful woman. So that was the real particular instruction that Mohini Murti wanted to impart to the sages through her movements enticing Lord Shiva. So it's a very similar way that Urvasi gives instructions to her saint, her earthly husband, King Pururava, because she says to him, when he comes to a point of wanting to give up his body because she's not there. So this is how he puts it. So clearly this king is very forthright, because he says, my beautiful body will fall down here. And because it is unsuitable for your pleasure, it will be eaten by foxes and vultures. So he was just ready right then and there to drop down dead and just give up his body. So her instruction to him is very interesting, how she responds to him. So just like Mohini Murti is instructing the sages, here is Urvasi instructing the king. So her instruction is to point out to him the nature of woman. So this is supposed to be a deterrent. So now I'm reading this and I'm going to point out that this doesn't apply to women that are on an elevated spiritual platform. It's merely applies to persons who haven't taken to the process of Krishna consciousness, so the regular population. So she gives this warning to a person who cannot control his senses, so that's the king. Basically, she's telling him he becomes the victim of a woman. So she puts it this way. So these are her statements to him. Be sober and don't allow the senses to overcome you like foxes. So he's ready to have the foxes eat him, but she's saying to him, your senses are like foxes. Don't let the foxes eat you. In other words, you should not be controlled by your senses. Rather, you should know that the heart of a woman is like that of a fox. There's no use making friendship with woman. And she goes further. She doesn't let go. She says, she further instructs King Pururava on the nature of a woman. So she says, they cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious. And therefore, they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or brother. And she doesn't stop there. She further adds, Women are easily seduced by men. And she added a bit more to that, which I haven't noted here, but was to the effect that because of being easily seduced, then new friendships are struck up continuously. So this was supposed to be the deterrent to the king. So one can understand that this voluntary ceasing of material desires, particularly the desire for sexual enjoyment, is going to be assisted by the association of a devotee as opposed to having the association of a non-devotee, because particularly non-devotees are interested in exactly that, the satisfying of or having that satisfaction for the senses related to sexual activity. And it says also the satisfaction of the belly. So, I mean, I have had this experience. There's, as a person who was just quite young, working long ago, you know, in the workplace, one comes into contact. I came into contact with somebody, and over all the years, the person has always occasionally given a call to me. And that's precisely what the person wants to talk about, you know, sexual conquests. And it's extremely difficult to hear. And I find myself, you know, trying to, you know, move, give Bhagavad Gita verses, divert the attention. And nothing works. So I've come to a point where I've decided, actually, you know, now that my phone number has changed, the person cannot phone, because the person is incorrigible. That is the source of pleasure. That so naturally, I was interested to read that, you know, in the Uddhavad Gita, there's commentary by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he says, even the association of one such person is very detrimental. So I was quite happy to read that. Then I thought, okay, I can feel justified. I'm not being cruel to someone. So anyway, the reason that the association of a devotee plays an important role in vanquishing these kind of desires to gratify the senses is the devotees are helping to revive that forgotten attraction for devotional service. So, you know, the diversion of the attraction. And also helping one to take a more renounced position. So through that association of a devotee, one gradually can come to understand that maintaining those desires for sense enjoyment means that one's actually serving one's animalistic propensities. So now King Pururava, he came to a particular understanding that's very much like that of Mohini Murti instructing the sages. And he raised this question: what is the use of a comprehensive education, the practice of austerities and renunciation, a lengthy study of the religious scriptures, or living in solitude, if after all of that, one's mind is stolen by a woman? So naturally, he's using himself as an example. And this is from Uddhava Gita, again from the 20th chapter. So the statement by Srila Prabhupada, or no, actually it's Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who's doing the commentary. He says the solution lies, and he puts it, you know, nicely and graphically, following the gopis of Vrindavan, because they accepted Krishna as their paramour. And in this way, one can free the mind from lust. So this is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in commenting on King Pururava and his particular difficulty. Now there's a contrast in the position that's taken by Lord Shiva and King Pururava. Because King Pururava takes the position of expressing shame. And this is how he speaks to himself. Shame on me. I was ignorant of my real self-interest, although I considered myself to be highly learned. Although I achieved the exalted position of being Lord of the Earth, I was controlled by a woman, just like a bullock or an ass. So he develops a sober mood eventually, and he reiterates this profound understanding he reaches. And he comes to the point of taking up devotional service, and this is his profound realization. And this is the verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted here, because, you know, just understanding King Pururava's raging fire that continued even with Urvasi leaving him, then still actually wanting to perform sacrifices to get to the heavenly planets, which he did. And finally, at that time, he came to his senses. So he actually pursued all the way to the heavenly planets. And this is after that that he comes to this verse that Srila Prabhupada's quoting, and he says these words: one should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. So, you know, he really takes the cautious position now. So, which, anyway, the contrast is that Lord Shiva, we'll see in the next verse in the discussion tomorrow, he doesn't experience shame. He accepts. having been enticed by Mohini Murti, he's at peace with it. Well, he certainly didn't live a lifetime going through the problem of King Pururava, who was stoking his internal fire, so his position's a little different. There's that difficulty of being attracted by sensual desires. And Srila Prabhupada says that always there has to be some caution, so in dealing with women. Not taking into account the very strong statements by Urvasi, because that's not Srila Prabhupada's position. He specifically states that women and men, having been engaged in Krishna consciousness, they're actually on an equal level. So this is Srila Prabhupada's position. But he does advise caution in dealing with women. And so King Pururava, he had a means to give up his robust sexual desires, and the means he employed was to go and live in a forest. So he completely isolated himself. And in the forest, of course, because he'd taken to devotional service, he just, and it was the age, he meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was his means to give up his robust sexual desires. And it means that he gave up those desires. And in a similar way, Srila Prabhupada, his advice, this cautious dealing with women part, and I think it applies conversely too, is meditating upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So meditating upon the deity form is Srila Prabhupada's advice for bringing that fire down, and certainly, and not feeding or stoking the fire. So, and there's a very fantastic verse that I came across in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that really nails this home. the verse says, self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which non-violence and renunciation is consequential. So it just happens naturally. So all of a sudden one can give up that you know, pursuit of a life of enjoyment through the senses. And it's interesting, the mention is that then one is following a life of non-violence, because there's a kind of violence inflicted on oneself by stoking that fire. It's extremely painful. So it requires self-control and gradual attachment to the Supreme Lord. So the two go together. And this is the path of being liberated from that internal fire. And so it means that the self-control is not artificially that one stops the senses from material enjoyment, but it's through becoming gradually attached to the deity form of the Lord, gradually attached to the Supreme Lord, because one's engaging those senses in the service of the Supreme Lord. And I'll just read the first two lines of this particular verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, because I think it's rather wonderful. Yatra nuraktaha sahishaiva dira vyopohaya dehatsu sangam udam. Self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment. So I'll end there. So those are the thoughts on this particular verse. If there's any query or elaboration on this painful condition that can result.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. I like that chapter about Urvashi, and how do you say his name?
Urvashi is the Apsara, and it's King Pururava.
Yeah, Pururava. One thing my appreciation about these classes is that, generally speaking, no one goes to sleep. Because we can see on Sunday feasts, or just in general, when you talk about Haridas Thakur and Prahlad and their morals and ethics, it's like. But if you talk about like Shiva pulling Mohini's hair, they're like attentive, a million questions. So that's one thing I appreciate about these classes. Kind of in a joking way, it's kind of like a alluring thing just to bring them a Krishna consciousness. Then you could give them the, like, you know, the other stuff. So in a joking way. So, but my question is essentially related to one point Bhaktivinoda Thakur made in Jiva Dharma that I really appreciated. It's I think chapter 8. Essentially, he says, even if a Vaishnava is able to remove all lust and anger from his heart, the desire for pratishtha, pride, honor, distinction, doesn't leave so easily and is very detrimental to one's consciousness, even more than lust. And the reason I appreciate this, because there's many examples, I'll give maybe a couple, is that Hiranyakashipu, I've mentioned this point many times before, but Hiranyakashipu, his name means the lover of money and women. So there's like no question he will give that up, but he did give it up to become God. He performed so many austerities for millions of years, even celibacy, which, you know, somebody who loves women, you know, that's like a hellish. But he did that just to become God. And although he was able to give up lust, one thing he couldn't give up is his pride. When Prahlad disagreed with him, "My father, you're not God," then he blew up wanting to kill Prahlad. And so that's why I appreciate that point. And there's many other examples, like Durvasa. He was a renunciate. He gave up lust. But Ambarish Maharaj just took a sip of water and he became so furious and wanted to kill him. So there's many examples of that. So my question essentially is that if we all had an option, would you rather be a pervert or proud? Most people say, "I'd rather be proud." But we could see that in pride and envy, you really want to hurt somebody. You want to hurt their reputation. You want to kill them, at least in the mind, or kill their reputation. But in a sense, we could see that many devotees who were just like Bhava Mango Thakur, he was lust after a prostitute, and many other examples I can't think of, they still obtained the mercy of the Lord despite their, you know, perversities. They were still elevated by the mercy of the Lord. But anyone who was proud, even if they gave up lust, became degraded because they committed Vaishnava Parad. So my question is essentially, how do we not become discouraged? Because we see so many people leave Krishna consciousness because, you know, I'm lusty. But in the end, you can't enjoy lust forever, you know. You can't have sex all day. You know, you're going to have to come back to Krishna consciousness. But then you're so embarrassed to come back to the same community. So before we leave Krishna consciousness, how do we give up this tendency that, you know, maybe I should give up my pride a little bit more, and then I could, you know, maintain my Krishna consciousness, you know, stop criticizing devotees, stop feeling, you know, be forgiving, tolerate, you know, you're a prisoner too, you know, no one's perfect. So can you elaborate on those points? I know it was kind of a smoothie of questions, but maybe if you could elaborate on those points.
So you were making a contrast that persons could be confronted with the choice between perversion or pride, and you put a lot of focus on the pride actually being problematic. And wanting to know how to get to grips with that, because the pride honor distinction thing seemed to override even lust, because lust could go, but pride honor and distinction would still be there. So you were interested how that could be overcome. So on a subtle level, the pride, honor, and distinction. Well, lust lust or that strong desire to have sexual satisfaction is doesn't have to always be gross. It can be subtle too. So the pride and honor, looking for honor or distinction, is subtle, but in the same way, lust can also act very subtly. So I don't think it's completely accurate to see it as just a gross manifestation. Like in this particular example of King Pururava, it seemed that indeed the gross part of lust was emphasized. I mean, there's Urvasi later on, she actually, when he eventually found her, she gave him a concession that he could spend one night a year with her. And so that example was, you know, the lust or the satisfaction of the sexual desire still needing to be fulfilled by King Pururava. And it seems there that it's gross, but it's not always gross. It's like extremely subtle. So, I mean, pride appears to be a subtle thing, but then you also see gross manifestations of pride where, I mean, you brought up that it could be wishing to destroy the reputation of someone. So that also has to have external gross acts to allow for that. You know, some action has to be performed externally, you know, whether it's, speaking ill words of someone or something to that effect. So both have their subtle and their gross aspects. So I wouldn't dismiss having and say that lust has been conquered and one is just left with pride and the desire for distinction and honor. and oh, the other's out of the picture. Look, you're just having these subtle things to deal with. The lust is present there in a subtle form too. So it's not that it's now one is free of that, or, you know, one's made a choice that's out of the picture and you're just dealing with pride and honor and or that desire for honor and distinction. It's not like that. The lust remains there, and in a subtle form it plays itself out. So it's it can be, you know, mental contemplation, and it can also be how one arranges one's life. So there's always the element of choice, whether one's dealing with the desire for honor and distinction or the need to somehow feed the lustful desires. They both require choices in managing. So therefore, when one is conscious of both, and both are subtle, both are gross, so on all levels one has to actually try and arrange one's life to protect oneself. So the like this particular instruction here on the part of King Pururava is he truly understood that the danger was so great that even a woman that wasn't an attractive woman or that one necessarily considered in the light of satisfying sexual desires, a mother or a daughter or a sister, even those persons one shouldn't be physically that close to. So he took made that statement because he understood that it's on such a subtle level, that need for gratification, that even the external object may not be the right one, but the drive is there. So I mean, you termed it a kind of a perversion, but it's the senses demanding that gratification. So in all cases, the desire for fame and distinction, the desire to gratify sexual desires, in both cases, all the protective measures need to be done so that one isn't feeding those desires. And the protective measures are because one understands that awful internal fire that's aroused that just brings so much suffering. So then one does the necessary external arrangements, and where it's possible, one tries to divert one's attention and find one's satisfaction in services to the Supreme Lord in all cases. So the pride can be in playing the harmonium. So, you know, you're satisfying the sense of speech or the sense of hearing. You know, you're gazing at the beautiful form of the deity. So, you know, getting the eyes satisfied by the beautiful form of Srimati Radharani, and extremely exquisite. I mean, beautiful lotus eyes and the most beautiful gesture of the hand, a benedictory gesture, an expressive mood, a loving, expressive, very personal response to one's devotion. I mean, it's extremely satisfying. So always one tries to make that arrangement, you know, sees the deity, spends time, you know, really studying the features, because it has a huge impression on the mind. So it's very, 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 very satisfying. So that's those kind of simple arrangements where you're diverting is necessary. And in the worst case scenario, one prays internally desperately. Well, not worst case scenario. You say if one is not able to directly be performing some service, or, you know, as or gazing at the deities directly, then one prays fervently, very fervently, because that's also connecting. It's that transcendental connection that gives the strength to not give way to feeding those desires. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.